Let's do this. Woo! Ring the bell. This is Between the Ropes.
Oh, you're going for the dirt, for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
It's time to get Between the Ropes. Between the Ropes.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining in to the Between the Ropes podcast. Brian Fritz here. Couple of interviews coming up on today's podcast. Later on, we'll hear from Court Bauer, who is the executive producer for AAA's Triple Mania 23, which is going to be on pay-per-view in the United States and in Canada. The first time that's happened since 1994. So we'll talk with Court about all the things going on with Triple Mania this year, how you can watch it, the card, and some other things as well when it pertains to Triple Mania. Plus, we'll talk about some other state of the wrestling business things with Court as well. But first, the latest person eliminated from Tough Enough, this time Mata. Another surprising elimination from Tough Enough, but we talked to Mata about being eliminated from the show, all the surprises that went with that, and we talk about his background as well. He has a very unique background when it comes to his upbringing, traveling the world, playing pro basketball, and even having a small part, a very small part, of Game of Thrones. So here is my conversation with Mata from Tough Enough. Hey, Mata, hey, how you doing today, man?
Hey, Brian, how you doing? I'm good, thank you.
You know, watching Tough Enough last night, I think you had the most stunned look on your face of anybody that has been eliminated so far in the competition. Did you think there was any chance that you'd be walking away last night?
To be honest, no, not at all. I had no, I didn't think there was a chance I was going to go home last night. I was just so confident in myself. And I was, as my face showed, I was stunned.
And I think you were pretty angry too, and I think rightfully so.
Yeah, I was definitely angry. I'm a competitor. I hate to lose. And especially when I know that I should have won, that makes it even worse. You know, if I lose, and it was, you know, I deserve to lose, it's fine, but it's different when I believed in my heart, and a lot of people out there believe me too, that I shouldn't have went home last night. But, you know, that's life sometimes, and you just got to roll with the punches. I got my head held up high and ready to take that next step.
Well, I think one of the biggest parts of controversy of the show was obviously The Miz was a new judge. And he's the guy that not only got you in the bottom three, but he also saved Amanda. So do you think that was The Miz just trying to get some attention and just trying to shake things up, like you said, and kind of playing his character that we see in WWE each week?
I'm not really sure if, you know, what he was trying to do. I can't really, you know, speculate on his intentions, but, you know, it, you know, I don't know why he called me out in the bottom three, and, you know, he saved Amanda. His reason for putting me in the bottom three was, you know, I played the blame game, for whatever that means. You know, you're going to have to ask him that question. I'm dying to find the answer, too, actually. But I don't really know, you know, the reason for it. You know, some people were telling me, you know, he was targeting me for some reason. But to be honest, I have no idea why. But again, you know, it is what it is, and now it's time to move on.
Did you get an opportunity to speak with him after the show?
No, not really. I spoke to Chris Jericho and Paige, and you know, they were amazing. They were very supportive. I spoke to Lita. I think I spoke to everybody, and Daniel Bryan. I spoke to everybody but him, I think.
Well, I think Jericho gave you some great advice, and he actually said that he expects you to be back, and he hasn't said that to anybody. So how encouraging is that to get that kind of vote of confidence from him?
Oh, yeah. Hearing that from Jericho was amazing. Huge boost of confidence. You know, he told me that my promo that I cut at the end was just amazing. And, you know, he felt it. And he didn't even need to ask me if I was going to be back because he felt it and he saw it in my eyes. And, you know, he's right. What I said last night in my plea was coming from my heart. You know, it wasn't a character I was playing. It wasn't something scripted. It was me to the judges, to the fans, and I believed everything I said, and I am confident in myself. I think I have what it takes to become a WWE superstar, and I have the passion for it, and that's the main thing, and I do want it more than anything, and getting that boost of confidence from Jericho is huge, especially at this time, and it's time to just continue working and try to get back there and hopefully make all my dreams come true.
You know, there's so much that goes into that competition, and obviously you're trying to do the best you can when it comes to the different skills that they put out there, but I think when you talk about passion, when you talk about fire, when you talk about how into it some people are, you know, and we've saw the passion that you had, and not only in that promo you did last night, but a couple other times too. How much did that sit with you and the other guys, and knowing, like, this is what I need to focus on more than anything? Or was it just kind of, you know, I just got to do the best I can at everything and just see how it all shakes out?
I mean, in terms of like, you know, some of the challenges, they were definitely, you know, out there, different. I've never done any of that stuff before. And I, you know, I came in with, you know, my strength with speaking ability, my personality, the ability to, you know, draw attention and just the presence. And I, you know, I definitely thought that I did arguably the best job out of everybody in terms of that department. And I did pretty well in the ring too. But, some of the guys out there, you know, they might not have that speaking ability, and they have trouble with that. And that's huge in the WWE. If you don't have a personality, if you can't sell yourself, if you can't communicate with your fans, WWE universe, the crowd, you're going to have a very tough time out there.
And I thought one of the things that we saw from you was the intangibles. Like when you're going through the drills and just the in the ring and the little things that you put into it. And when you talk about the speaking ability, did the trainers actually point that out to you? Was that something that you noticed as well?
Yeah, definitely. Everybody, you know, thought of me as, you know, I was the promo king. You know, I was the best at cutting promos. I was the best at, you know, I had, you know, an amazing ring entrance, a presence. And when I speak, everybody just stops to listen because, you know, I do have that, you know, personality and that just that, that it factor, if you like to call it. And that's something that you can't teach. You know, you can teach somebody how to wrestle in the ring. You can teach somebody, you know, all these moves, but you can't teach what I have. And the trainers did point that out, and it was good to know that because it's something that you can't get. You know, it's either you have it or you don't, and I'm glad that I do.
You have a pretty interesting backstory looking at everything. Growing up in Egypt, and then you've traveled the world pretty much already, haven't you?
Yeah, I grew up in Egypt. I lived there. I lived in Saudi Arabia. I grew up in New Zealand, then moved to America, then played pro basketball all over the world. So I have traveled the world, and it's great because you get to see different things, different people, and it makes you appreciate what you have more. And it makes you think outside of the box, and you see how other people live and see things differently. And it's great to have that because even though I'm only 28 years old, I felt like I was a granddad in that, you know, in the house with the rest of the kids, as I call them, because they just didn't have the same maturity level and life experiences that I did.
And that's one thing too. I don't think you really got caught up too much in the drama of it. You know, you spoke your mind at different things and you weren't afraid to back down from people, but how easy is it to get caught up in different things when you're in that kind of environment?
Yeah, it's definitely easy to get caught up in it. I try to stay away from it as much as possible. The drama does take up a lot of, you know, energy and time, and to me, it was just worthless drama that people bring up rather than focusing on the actual competition. And I tried to stay away from that. It was just like kids play. But sometimes you get so sick of the drama that you kind of have to step in a little bit. But for the majority of the part, you know, it was just like I was watching a movie or a TV show. You know, I'd just grab some popcorn with Tanner and watch.
You know, it's funny on your bio page, too. One of the things it says is not only, obviously, your background of, you know, living in Egypt, but it says you escaped during the Egyptian Revolution in 2011. What was that experience like?
Yeah, that experience was definitely crazy, life-changing, and it was kind of a turning point in my life. It just made me realize that tomorrow's never guaranteed, and you have to chase your dreams and what you love, and life's too short to do something you don't like. And that's the time when I was playing pro basketball. And, you know, I kind of fell out of love with basketball. You know, I've been doing it for so long, and now it was a job for me. I didn't have that same passion for it. I was doing it since, you know, 8, 9 years old. And that's when, you know, I kind of met my wife at that same time, and I made the decision to stop playing because I just didn't have the passion for it anymore. And I wanted to continue and chase my other dreams. And now my dream is to become a WWE superstar, and I'm going to chase that with all I have with no regret.
It's funny you talk about your basketball career, because I saw your highlight video that you put up on YouTube. I was looking at your game there. You were pretty shifty around the rim.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people see me now. I'm a lot bigger now. Now I'm a personal trainer. I put on, you know, some size. I'm probably like 40 to 50 pounds bigger than I was when I played basketball. But back then, you know, I was a lot more agile, athletic, definitely shifty around the rim. And I still got it, you know. I'm just a lot bigger now.
Yeah, you had a feathery jumper, I would call it, too. I liked it.
Oh, yeah. I still got that jumper. I was in the gym the other day seeing if I still got it. It's never going to go away.
Okay, I was curious about that, because there's some people, once they start putting on some mass, sometimes their shooting skills go down.
Yeah. One of my goals, even though I was putting on mass, I would never consider myself a bodybuilder. I was always an athlete. And that's why I did so well here, because I'm not a bodybuilder. You know, I'll forever be an athlete. It's not about how big you are or how strong you are. It's what you can do with it at the same time. And my training style is incorporating everything, you know, strength, speed, power, explosiveness, agility. So I pride myself in being an overall athlete.
So when it comes to the personal training business that you have, what was it like being a part of, a small part of Game of Thrones, and that you trained Khal Drogo for that role?
Yeah, it was amazing. Jason's a great friend of mine. He's like a brother, and it was amazing just to be able to be around him. And we actually just filmed a movie together called The Bad Batch, and we're training together, and it was awesome just to be around him and just to get that experience of, you know, the movie business and being around all these superstars. And actually, Jim Carrey and Keanu Reeves were on that movie, so it was just like I was a little bit starstruck when I got there.
Wow, what role did you play, and how much time did you get?
I got a little bit of time. I was playing. It's a crazy movie. It's a post-apocalyptic cannibal love story. So I played a crazy cannibal, and that's why I have the blonde mohawk. I never had the blonde mohawk in my life, but the director wanted me to get a blonde mohawk. So I was playing a crazy cannibal. I was one of the people in Jason's like tribe, as you may call it. I had the blonde mohawk, and Tough Enough was like 3 weeks after we stopped filming. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to keep it. I think I like this look.
So do you keep up on Game of Thrones?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I was going to say, more shocking moment, you getting eliminated last night, or the death of Jon Snow?
I would have to say me getting eliminated, because that wound is still fresh.
So what is next for you? Because you talked about the passion you have for this, and we mentioned, you know, Jericho gave you some encouraging words. So what's the next step in you trying to get into WWE?
Next step is definitely getting my foot in the door with NXT, getting back here to Orlando in the Performance Center. This is a state-of-the-art facility. They have the best coaches and training in the world. And right now I'm actually heading up to D.C. tonight to see my family. And Patrick's actually up there right now, so I'm going to meet up with him tomorrow and get some training in the ring, because with me, there's no days off. You know, everybody's like, oh, go enjoy some time with your family and relax, you know, have a vacation. For me, it's no days off. You know, I want this, and I'm getting right back in the ring. I want to get better, and I want to get back here with NXT, and then from there, hopefully into the WWE, and from then on out.
Well, sorry to see you gone from the show, but best of luck as your future goes, and hopefully we'll see you in NXT here in the near future.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much, Brian. Really appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks, Mata. Good talk there with Mata, and I feel like he got screwed. I think a lot of other people feel the same way, too. I didn't like the way that everything went down, and I really feel like The Miz was just trying to get some attention for himself. He was trying to stir things up, like he said, and try to bring some drama to the show, and that's why he did what he did. And I also don't think it's cool that he was talking about Amanda and saying, well, I want to save her because she's hot. That, to me, is a pretty lame excuse in today's day and age that you want to keep her around. But like I said, Miz was just trying to get some attention for himself, and it came at the expense of Mata. And it's a reality show. You have to expect the unexpected, and he's gone. I thought Mata, with all the guys that are left on that show, was probably the most talented. And him and Patrick were the favorites on the men's side, and now they're both gone, so we'll see exactly what happens. But if ZZ wins this thing, that's going to be the worst thing possible. He might be a nice guy. I'm sure he is, but he should not be there. And I don't mind watching Tough Enough, but I watch it every week knowing that it's a reality show, and it is what it is, so I don't get too worked up. I don't get too upset, but still, it's quite a joke right now. It is quite a joke. So before the next conversation with Court Bauer, just want to thank everybody that is supporting Between the Ropes on Patreon. If you want to check it out, please do. Go to patreon.com/betweentheropes, or you can just go to betweentheropes.com. We've got a link on the top right-hand side. But if you can support us there, that would be spectacular. We have bills to pay. We have things we have to pay for when it comes to the website. And if you can support us there, even for a dollar a month, it really helps us out and allows myself and the others to keep doing Between the Ropes and actually give more time towards it as well. So we all have to have jobs. We all have bills to pay. And if you can help us out, that would be fantastic, because we do need your help. And we do have different tiers that are set up for everybody on there, where you get different things if you pledge a certain amount each month. If you can't support us on Patreon, I get it. Please subscribe to us on YouTube, on iTunes, on Stitcher. Keep checking out the website. You can support us in a lot of different ways. But if you can support us on Patreon, if you like what we do, and you say, you know what, I want to make sure that those guys can keep doing Between the Ropes, and you can pledge whatever amount per month, fantastic, and we totally appreciate it. Plus, we're doing giveaways every week now that for people that are subscribing to us on Patreon. So please check us out there. Please help us out. Support us on Patreon. He's Court Bauer, the executive producer for AAA's Triple Mania 23, which will be on pay-per-view Sunday, August 9th, 7 p.m. Eastern here in the United States. It's the first time AAA's been on pay-per-view since 1994. How's everything going, Court?
Hey, can't complain. We are going 200 miles per hour towards August 9th, and it's been a real blast working with AAA. They have a great team down in Mexico City, some great, young, hardworking guys, and I'll put them up there with the WWE in terms of their work ethic, their quality of work. And the amazing thing is, like, virtually everyone in their office, I'm learning, is, like, bilingual. And they work with me on the weekends, they're working with me late at night. I mean, these guys work their asses off. So it's been an amazing pleasure working with guys that are that hardworking, that ambitious. And I'm really lucky because, you know, in wrestling, there tends to be people that are kind of just laid back and aren't so aggressive when it comes to getting things done or meeting deadlines. It's kind of there's a big issue when it comes to organizational skills in wrestling. I think that's why Vince is so successful, because he holds people accountable and he cracks the whip. And you need to do that in wrestling. If you don't do that, you get that lackadaisical kind of culture in an office. But AAA, they're not messing around. So it's been really a lot of fun working with them the last few weeks.
So how did this all come together where AAA is going to be coming to pay-per-view here in the United States? And it's been, like I said, over two decades since that's happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dorian Roldan, the executive vice president of AAA, it's something that's been on his map for a while. And he's trying to do a lot of cool and ambitious things for the property. And this was one of those things. And we've been friends now for going on just over 2 years. And we've talked a lot about different things over the last 2 years. And the timing worked out that this was something we could do now. And the pay-per-view universe is changing a little bit. I think there's a little bit more wiggle room for wrestling and wrestling-related product on pay-per-view versus, say, 1997, when ECW had to have, like, a sign-in campaign and get the fans behind it to get the pay-per-view companies to even consider it. Now, because the WWE has shifted their strategy, pay-per-view is looking to fill that hole, and I think fans are going to be rewarded for it, because you get AAA, you get other companies out there, they're able to put their product out on a nationwide basis that maybe they hadn't in the past. And for AAA, we're not only hitting the United States, we're also hitting Canada, and we're available on all major carriers, satellite, telecom companies, every which way you can get this pay-per-view, and worldwide on the internet. So you'll be able to hear and see the pay-per-view in English with English text on the graphics and everything. And I'm actually taking a page from that old 94 pay-per-view, where if you watch When Worlds Collide, they started with everything in Spanish. So hair versus hair was in Spanish and all the different stipulations. And the same thing we're going to do here. It's going to blend from Spanish to English. So you get that authentic vibe. You get the English commentary. You'll hear the introductions, the ring introductions in Spanish. So it'll have that authenticity, but you'll also be able to have that familiarity so you know what's going on during the show.
You mentioned, you know, WWE changing their business game plan, and they're not on pay-per-view as much. So was it pretty easy to put together a deal when it comes to In Demand and the other pay-per-view companies to make this happen?
It took me half a day.
That's pretty easy.
For me it was because I know the right people and I can make a few phone calls and magic happened. And I don't want to sound cocky, but that's exactly how it happened. And they have such a great product too, because if you look at AAA and go to AAALucha.com, you can see the pictures of the arena. They have like 20,000 people at the building on a regular basis. Great lighting, great entrances, WWE level entrances. They did an entrance recently with the Psycho. It's like they have major league production value there. Rey Mysterio came out earlier this summer with a Terminator look. They had one of the Terminator robots. He came out with the gear and everything. And in fact, this event, we haven't even announced this until this conversation I'm having with you, but we have a deal with Paramount Pictures to cross-market Mission Impossible Rogue Nation with Triple Mania. So there's going to be that aesthetic as part of the entrance and part of the graphics package. So it's a big deal. This isn't some rinky-dink pay-per-view. It's going to look great, big size arena. And I think that's what appealed to the pay-per-view vendors is, listen, you got great lighting, you have a huge audience, it feels major league, it looks major league, and you have star power. You have Rey Mysterio, you have Alberto Del Rio, you have Matt Stryker in the broadcast booth, a familiar voice, and you have Hugo Savinovich as his tag team partner in the booth, and a lot of great dynamic wrestlers. So for them, I think it was a very easy sell. Like I said, it was like a layup, and when I go into these deals, you never know what you're going to get. But this was a real easy sell, and I was very happy about it.
I'm curious what the crossover is going to be here in the United States, because obviously people have seen Lucha Underground, and AAA has been around much longer. They're two totally different companies, but I'm curious to see if people are going to say, you know what, I'm so interested in this now that rather than just watching it on TV in the select areas they can get it here in the States, then now they're going to say, you know what, I want to pay the money and I want to go out of my way to watch this on pay-per-view for an event that's been around for so many years that they haven't been able to watch.
Well, this is phase one for us. This is the first wave. And so our goal is really just to kind of just establish our base and build from that. And part of that also is getting the rub from like the UFC. They have the Ronda Rousey fight coming up this weekend, and to be able to have our 30-second spot rolling throughout this weekend, before the fight, after fight, in the rotation on the pay-per-view Barker channels is a great marketing resource. And that right there raises the profile, raises awareness for AAA Lucha Libre. And as we keep growing this thing, I think it's going to – more people have awareness, more people will know about the product and be intrigued by it. And so, you know, we're not looking at this, you know, that we're going to hit a grand slam out of the gates, but financially we're not in a position where we can't take a bath. We can't lose money on this. They have a production truck, a satellite truck, right there in Mexico City that's going to uplink this regardless. So we're just giving the coordinates to the States, and that's it. So there's no additional overhead, essentially, for this event. So it's a real win-win situation, whereas any other company is like, well, they're getting into pay-per-view. Now they got to get a truck. Now they got to bump up their production budget. No, these guys already had a great production budget, just boosted by the Paramount Pictures marketing pack. And it's, again, just giving coordinates to the stateside partner. So it's a real win-win situation, virtually no risk. And it's a strategic phase one move. And I think as you see the bigger picture over the next several months, you'll see where we're taking this thing. But in the perfect world, I think we're looking to get a bigger level of exposure down the road, or higher level of exposure down the road, but you got to start somewhere, and it'll start on August 9th.
After the deal came together, when it came to the pay-per-view companies, how frantic was everything then to put together whatever production, whatever things you needed to get out there to get to those pay-per-view providers?
Dude, I haven't had a day off since we sealed the deal. I've been working weekends late at night, wake up first thing in the morning, 6 a.m. I am on my iPhone texting people down in Mexico. We need this, we need that. or I'm working with the vendors, or we're working on media to get these guys interviews. We're getting the word out. We just finished a countdown special with Hugo and Stryker. So it's – and we launched the website, AAALucha.com. We're starting a social media presence on Twitter and Facebook. So it's been go, go, go. And, like, I'm doing the job of probably six people. Other people are doing a similar thing where you're doing, like, the job of five people. I'm just very lucky to be surrounded by really good people when it comes to being able to handle that. And that's very similar to WWE, again, where you're doing a lot of jobs and you're very talented and you have a hard work ethic. And you combine those things and you can have a lot of success. So yes, we're working very hard. Yes, I haven't had a break since early July, but it's been so rewarding because everyone I'm working with is so awesome. So I love it. I love being able to wake up and just get to it. I'd rather do that than just sit around and poolside and read a book. I want to be busy 24/7.
Well, you talk about the game plan. That's going to be revealed in the coming months when it comes to AAA and going to pay-per-view here in the United States and Canada. So In a perfect world, how often do you think you would like to be on pay-per-view, abroad?
I think you kind of have to test the market. And I think in a perfect world, the ceiling is probably four or five times a year. If people come every 30 days, I think it's a bit much. Our price point is half that of the UFC when it comes to what we're asking for an HD feed. It's $29.95 versus UFC's like just north of $60. So I think you're getting good value. But if you do that every month or even, every other month, you're asking for a lot. I think if we could do four pay-per-views, five pay-per-views, that would be fantastic. We might the first year do less than that. We'll see how it goes, because we really want every step as we build this foundation to be a step in the right direction. We're not adverse to risk, but at the same time, you want to be very calculated. So everyone feels the momentum internally, but also the fans, and from a business end, you want that too. So could we be back again for another show this year? It's very possible.
Now, one of the big things on the show, obviously, you've got a double main event. You've got Rey Mysterio Jr. against Mysticis for the first time ever, and a hair versus hair match between Alberto El Patron against Brian Cage. How big was it to have Rey be a part of this? And if Rey wasn't a part of it, do you think this deal would have come together?
Yeah, I think it all helps. Familiarity, star power is a big factor, whether it's a licensing deal, a pay-per-view deal. I think it gives you a boost. That's what every promotion looks for. I don't care if it's WWE, TNA. I mean, Brock Lesnar coming back gave WWE a boost. TNA tried with several guys to get a boost, and they just, for various reasons, weren't able to convert that into a true boost for the company. But Rey, he's been a big factor. You look at AAA in the last 18 months, they've signed three of the biggest free agents that they could have signed. In number one, Mysticis, the former Sin Cara, the former Mystico, and then Alberto Del Rio last summer, and now Rey. You really, in terms of just, I don't care if it's Lucha Libre or just straight up American style wrestling, those are three big gets. And to acquire those guys, it was great for Mexico. But over here in the States, I think those guys are going to really click, because they're not their level of work, their star presentation, their star power, the way they carry themselves as top stars, it's unmatched. And they're young. I mean, you got all three of the guys are under the age of 40, and very marketable, bilingual. Two of them are bilingual. Mysticis knows a little bit of English, but the other two, great. You could put them on Spanish radio, English print. You could do it all. So really easy to work with those guys on that stuff. So we get not just the star power, but guys that can communicate and market and sell the product to two different audiences, which that's fantastic, considering the Hispanic audience, Hispanic base in America is going to be the majority.
Well, what do you think it's going to take to get people interested that's not part of the Hispanic audience here in the United States and Canada, to get them interested in the show? Obviously, there's a lot of wrestling fans, mm-hmm. and there's going to be some people that obviously know about AAA and they look at the names, but is there anything specific that you can try to target to make it more interesting for that audience, to get them to get a show like this and be more interested in AAA?
I think a lot of what fans want today that they haven't been able to get outside of WWE is that big show feel, big production, guys that have that big money look, the gear, the entrances, the big arenas, the really good lighting, the pageantry. Great work is abundant in America and beyond, but to be able to package great work, innovation, the big show feel, and have, you know, that first class presentation in terms of a broadcast, there really hasn't been anyone that's been able to do that. AAA, their shows, you're going to see big pyro, you're going to see a big ass entrance set, you're going to see cutting edge wrestling. You know, Rey Mysterio and his whole crew back in the 90s in AAA, they were like these revolutionary flyers, and Rey's now come back home, and you have now a new wave of revolutionary flyers, guys like Angelico, who's really amazing, a dynamic high flyer. You have Jack Evans, you have Drago, you have Fenix, you have Aerostar. I mean, I can go on and on. And then the women's wrestling is great with girls like Taya, just awesome. And Goya Kong, Super Porky's daughter, who's kind of like, you know, she's not, I'm gonna say, not gonna compare her to Awesome Kong, but she's a bigger girl, and she's pretty amazing in there too. So you have a lot of diversity in terms of the work. I mean, then you have Alberto, who works a bigger style. You have variety. You have a nice mixture of star power, innovation, all those things. And I also, you know, just being able to offer this product again in English really helps, because I think for fans, oh yeah, there's diehard fans that will watch it in Spanish. Being able to offer in English with a familiar individual, I just finished up working with him earlier this week in the studio, and my God, this guy could have, he should be calling wrestling here in the States. He's got such fire, and his ability to deliver, like Jim Ross, you know, a passionate call of the action. It's fantastic. So we're going to have authenticity in the booth and in the familiarity of Matt Stryker. So again, it's a little bit of everything, but the key ingredients that people have really looked for outside WWE but haven't been able to get are all here. So I think if they sample it, they're going to come back wanting more.
Why do you think companies here based in the United States have had so much trouble or have not focused on finding a Hispanic star?
How many of these companies have, say, a member of the Latin community or any minority on their creative team or working in their talent relations office?
Yeah.
You know, if you,
very
I mean,
few,
that,
if
that,
any.
That,
they just don't understand the any, mindset, I think.
How many have an affiliation or some sort of partnership, a formal partnership? I mean, you see these half-assed things, but the same could be said about Japan. Why aren't they, you know, even TNA they had all these great guys from New Japan, and they didn't do anything with them. Look at Okada, it's criminal. But they had these guys. So it's part of it's being able to identify talent and develop them. And I think you could probably make an argument for TNA. Unfortunately, they haven't been able to do that throughout their history. I mean, AJ Styles was a great get. Samoa Joe, great get. They also had CM Punk at one point in time. They could have had an amazing run with these guys I just mentioned, and now someone else's. New Japan has AJ Styles, UFC has CM Punk, and Samoa Joe's getting ready for a run at WWE. So, a lot of wrestling, I don't care what company it is, it comes down to leadership. If you have good leadership, you can get a lot of things done. Look at the magic that Paul Heyman created back in ECW on a shoestring budget, shoestring production. He was able to create that great leadership. He was able to take those guys and march into hell with them because he knew how to fire them, motivate them, and buy in. And most of the office today, they're not buying in. You know, when you can tell when the whole locker room buys in, and it's empowering. And you can get a lot more out of talent when they buy in. But that's almost like a lost art too. It's being able to not just finding qualified people for the jobs, but people that can really get the locker room to buy in. It's just not a paycheck. And they want it, and they have a higher level of desire. And right now, wrestling in a lot of ways, stateside's very nomadic. You do a date here, you do a date there, and you move on, and you're doing about 200 dates for different companies. And it's good that they're working that hard, but it's dates. It's not a focal effort that's perhaps truly raising your profile to the next level, because very few of them have TV. this day and age, you have companies or you have talent like the Young Bucks that have transcended because of the internet. But there's very few Young Bucks. You know what I mean? Right. There's the Young Bucks and there's everyone else. But they've been, they're probably the exception to the rule, along with like two or three other people. But they work very hard to, you know, put out the shirts, to do all their stuff on social media. And same with guys like Colt Cabana, a different type of act, but he works his ass off, that do-it-yourself kind of thing, to make his act work without TV. He uses a podcast as his platform to market himself. And I think he's done very well because of that. But you got to hustle. You can't just wait for people to book you and half-ass it. So you know, we live in a different time.
I know that Alberto is his own guy, but do we know exactly what happened with him? I mean, is he okay? Because, I mean, so many people are worried about what happened a few weeks ago where right. he didn't show up for an independent booking, and then people freaked out. And normally it's like, okay, things like this happen. You know, guys miss right. bookings for whatever reasons. But for whatever reason, this one kind of went – everybody went nuts about what happened with him.
Yeah, I found it weird that all of a sudden a no-show, which is almost a regular occurrence in wrestling, for God's sakes, turned into like almost like a wellness check that you were waiting for someone to like go knock on his door. And I don't know, like anything on the internet, things, you know, all of a sudden you say something twice, it's fact. Oh, I worried about him. Well, I'm worried about him too. I don't know why, but we're worried about him. And he's supposed to be here in the Northeast this weekend for two shots, and I expect he'll make them. He's been in regular contact with like the AAA office and stuff. I've sent him texts. Conan's talked to him. There doesn't seem to be any issue. So again, you say something twice in wrestling, especially on the internet, all of a sudden it's like you know, what's on fire? Where? Oh my God! And that kind of frenzy can get kicked up. He no-showed. He did contact, I guess, finally the promoter. They got in touch with each other, and I don't know if they made amends, but they definitely were communicating. So, you know, I've been a promoter, and there's nothing worse than when someone no-shows, especially an event where, you know, it's a charity thing. So I understand his position, and, you know, it's part of wrestling. That's not to make an excuse of it, but it was perplexing to me that it became – some sort of issue over his well-being.
But, yeah, because I think everybody was immediately jumping to conclusions. And before we really knew anything, because, I mean, like you said, this happens all the time on the, you know, with different shows as guys miss them. It's just, I guess it was because it was a higher profile guy and we had never heard of anything like this happening with him. Because he wasn't even being, I mean, he's being booked, but it's not like it's an overabundance of dates. And it just seemed odd that he wasn't there.
Yeah. You know, it's just one of those things where it was, but I don't know why it would lead to a concern about his well-being. You know, example, you know, he has a family, you know, I don't know, you know, when you're a family, I can tell you straight up, I have a family. Things happen. I have to cancel all my plans because something happened with my family. So I have to make sure that's my priority. Or who knows? Sometimes promoters don't send airline tickets or whatever. I don't know what happened there, but it was just, you know, it's happened before in wrestling, and no shows will happen again for various people. I've had guys no show me when I used to promote 1,000 years ago, and I'll tell you, being a promoter is not fun. That's why I'll never promote again. I have no aspirations to ever do it, because that job, people think it's a glorious, glamorous job, and it's all of a sudden this is going to be this fun thing, and it's like, oh, I always wanted to do that since I was a kid, is be a promoter. Then you become a promoter, and it's like you have to be really good with organizational skills. You have to, you know, you're doing almost like consumer level, you know, putting out fires. Yeah, so you're a bit like, you know, having to deal with the consumer level thing. You're having to deal with talent, which is like babysitting. Then you're having to figure out marketing. You have to do budgets. You have to do logistics with the arena. Sometimes the arena doesn't want you to come early. They want you to load in late. It is a nonstop thankless job, and you're getting crushed from like five different angles. So I my hat goes off to any and every promoter that's crazy enough and foolish enough to get into this thing. I had 2 years of hysteria, and I didn't sleep at all during that 2 year period. My health went to hell, and I never would ever want it to do that again, and anyone that's always asked me advice about promoting, I said, well, number one, why would you want to? Name the promoters that, on one hand, that are really successful, that made a good living, have a good quality of life because they got into that line of work. And you really can't. It's like Vince McMahon is almost like the exception to the rule here in the States. There's very few guys that have longevity, let alone success as a promoter in wrestling. So it's a constant struggle, and you're going to have all types of things come up. Buildings cancel, no shows, all that stuff. And it's not a cup of tea. If it was easy, everyone would do it. You know what I mean?
Oh, so yeah. Let me ask you this because you mentioned two years with MLW and how tough it was. Was it difficult when it came down at the end? Like, how long did you hold off closing down, and how difficult was it for you to close it down?
Oh man, no. Listen, the bottom line is if once we didn't have the wherewithal to continue events, it was a logical conclusion. It sucked to have to cancel future dates, but at the same time, I never wanted to be in a situation where you didn't pay someone or you had a check bounce or one of those things. I wanted to be able to, like, when I shut this thing down, have peace of mind finally. I didn't want any of those lingering issues. So it was a very practical thing to do. Okay, this is where we're at. I mean, okay, there was no delusional thoughts about, like, oh, we can still do it. Maybe if we did this, maybe we can sell people on hope in the locker. No, I want to be, like, it's already a tough enough job. I'm not
going to. Here's the reason why I asked the question. Yeah. Because, you know, I'm not saying TNA is going out of business tomorrow, and I don't know exactly what their future is, but obviously there are major issues going on with that company. And so many people bring up the question, you know, how much longer are they going to be around? And obviously they're trying to do everything they can to hold on. And for a lot of people, I mean, that's what it is, not only with companies like this, but for your jobs, that there's a lot of times that, you know, you're just trying to do everything you can before it totally goes down the drain.
Yeah, I mean, you're in survival mode, but there's a fine line between survival mode and being delusional, and so TNA right now is in survival mode, and they're going to try to kick open some door and just hope it stays open, and if they have the wherewithal to do that, if they can keep their cash flow in a positive direction during this transitional period, all those variables that the Carter family, if they want to, can provide and extend to TNA, will they, can they, should they? We'll see. It would be really sad to see TNA go out of business because of the loss of jobs. And again, anytime a company at that level is unsuccessful, for people outside of wrestling, people on the licensing end, people on the TV end, they that just proves that Vince is the only guy that can do this. When I think we all know that's not the case, but when you start to look at the bodies that are starting to stack up, it kind of says, well, maybe that there is something to that. Will anyone ever be as successful as Vince? Oh, man, to have that run he's had for 40 years, and to be able to bounce back from the brink of bankruptcy, you know, be tested a few times and be able to be resilient and bounce back and reinvent yourself. I don't think so. I think people can be successful, but at that level, it's going to be very hard. Never say never. I hope I'm proven wrong, because that would be amazing. But it's a tough one, and we'll see. TNA's the clock is ticking on their deal with Destination America. They do have an expiration date there. I really hope for all the talent and all the crew and everyone in those offices in Nashville that they can find a plan B, but the reality is, this time a year ago they were with Spike, and now they're with Destination America, and now they need to find a new home all within a 12-month period. They are with United Talent Agency, which is a fantastic top-level agency. This isn't some goofy agency. This is a high-level agency that people would love to be repped by. So they have good representation, but they have to be able to sell this product to someone. And right now you're in a position where the cable universe, the channels are expanding, yet what cable carriers want to pay the channels and what advertisers are paying the channels is shrinking. So you have to be cost effective, and 52 weeks of TV sounds awesome when you look at it week by week what wrestling costs. It is very economical, but now you're saying, okay, commit to this product that is not a blue chip product, for 52 weeks for how many years? You know, even if it's cheap, well, I can pay that same amount or less for 13 weeks of Bayou Hunting and or whatever the show is on Destination America, Pitmasters, and I can recycle that and three times throughout the year, and the ad rates are comparable. The risk is, you know, you're assuming a lot less risk as a network, as a business. So it's a different world we live in than it was, say, 10, 15 years ago when it came to cable and over-the-top services that WWE, I think, is very smart to be pursuing as aggressively as they are.
Well, here's another question about this then. Because, you know, WWE, they're obviously the gold standard when it comes to their TV deal and their brand, and we already see that they have problems when it comes to advertisers, and that's why they got the deal that they got with USA that they thought was not the money that they thought they were going to get. And then now we're seeing the problems with TNA, why they left Spike, and now with Destination America, and they're not getting the advertising dollars that they had hoped, or, you know, the cable channels didn't. So because of all this, and because of this kind of, you know, way that wrestling is looked at because of those advertising dollars and things, is it almost impossible now to get a TV deal for wrestling?
Again, you have to bring to the table a few things. You have to bring a track record. Being a startup, it's like, okay, well, then you have to demonstrate that you have the backing financially to not just last 2 weeks or 10 weeks. You got to be able to show us that if we're going to commit to you for a year, 2 years, that you can handle this if you don't have a track record, which, okay, now you really need serious financing. You're going to need star power because the networks – I remember MLW, I had meetings, and it's like, oh, can you get Hulk Hogan or The Rock or Steve Austin? They don't understand why – can you help pay for those guys? They don't understand this, the nature of the business, and they know the household names, not many other guys. You have to have a level of production, and that costs a ton of money. You have to have a product that feels like it has legs. And also, it's what's hot right now. You know, there was a time when, if this was 1998, TNA could find a home on 10 channels because wrestling was hot. Now wrestling isn't hot, and now more than ever, people look at, you know, franchises. They look at whether it's the Kardashians, WWE, the NFL. They, you know, the sure thing that has legs, that has, they're in Walmart. They have a book out on it, and you can get it on Amazon. They have heavy licensing. They look for things that have legs, and wrestling right now doesn't have that going for them, unfortunately. So it's very hard to do a startup company with just in general try to get on TV right now. You have to have all those ingredients: star power, production, the cachet of, you know, being around for a while. It's not easy. And like I said, if it was, everyone would be in it, and that it says a lot. So, you know, at the end of the day, I look at Destination America. I think Ring of Honor is gonna be fine, even if this is a bust for them, because they still have Sinclair Broadcasting in 60 markets to fall back on. You look at TNA, they don't have that to fall back on. They don't have the financing of a media conglomerate like Sinclair, which is worth $2 billion in their overall worth in terms of their assets and everything when you add it all up. Now, they're a big, big media company. So that's a problem, you know. It's interesting too. You take a step back and look at Destination America. Is this a channel that has really proven to be a great destination for wrestling? Can we look at any sort of measurement to see that, oh my God, everyone should want to be on this channel, WWE on down, because look how it's pop business for TNA. I'd submit to you it hasn't pop business for Ring of Honor.
Yeah, it's tough right now when it comes to everything for TV. You know, the TV landscape of wrestling is – it's much different, and it's very difficult right now. Let's get back to some AAA talk. I mentioned the double main event, obviously coming up for Triple Mania. So give a little bit of the backstory going into these matches.
Right. Well, I mean, the dream match of Miz DeCease and Rey Mysterio is pretty straight up. There was a Lucha World Cup that happened. It was a one-night show. It was an iPay-per-view, and we had English commentary for it with Matt Stryker and Vampiro manning the desk for that event. And they had teams from around the world. This is back in May. Competing like any World Cup, it was a trios format. So it was three man member teams facing off, and you had a team from Pro Wrestling NOAH, a team from All Japan Pro Wrestling, Ring of Honor was represented, TNA was represented, and then you had a Legends team from Mexico, and then you had the Dream Team, and then you had Team AAA as well. So the Dream Team was Alberto, Mr. Season Ray, and they won the thing, as any Dream Team should. Just like back in the day, as a big fan of Jordan Pip and seeing them on the Dream Team in the 90s, you know, if they didn't win, that would be a problem. But they ran through the tournament and kicked ass. And then there were starting to be rumblings of like, oh, it would be great to see that dream match and the rivalry between the two. Because if you look at the parallels between Rey Mysterio and Mysticis, well, Mysticis was known as Mystico in CMLL in the mid-2000s. And this guy like shattered box office records, especially in 2006. He was like packing it in at Arena Mexico. And that's like 19, 20,000 people every Friday night. He was a hot, hot act. And meanwhile, you had Rey Mysterio in the mid-2000s go to a global level as a household name in WWE, winning the WWE title, winning the Royal Rumble, and really just going to the next level and having an amazing run through the 2000s. So their careers paralleled in some ways. You had the most popular masked man in Mexico and then Rey transcending at a global level. And so I think even WWE, I can tell you when I was there, I remember pitching to sign Mystico. I'm thinking, man, it'd be amazing to do that match. Then they did sign him years later and they had on their drawing board the opportunity to do the match at a WrestleMania, and I think they were going to have everyone wear masks in the arena or the stadium and have like the most masked people in a certain area and break some weird Guinness record that I don't even understand.
Right.
But it was going to be Rey versus Sin Cara at the time because Mystico became Sin Cara and now he's Mysticis, but that match never happened. And so now that match is going to happen, and I think it's going to be really cool because you have two guys who are innovators that were super over and are over now work in the same company, and Mysticis is, you know, 200% healthy and has really upped his game. And I think it's a really cool match. And then you have on the other end, Alberto Del Rio has more of a national pride story with Brian Cage, who is like a very dynamic guy in that he's not just the big power man. He has uncanny agility. He can do backflips off the top rope. He can hold a guy and do a backflip while holding the guy. It's like insane. And so you have him going against Alberto. He beat Alberto back in February in a trios match when he came in. I think it was his first night. Then he just really just pushed this guy and kept pushing this guy throughout the spring. Ultimately, he beat him up and left him laying and put the American flag over him and then stepped on top of him as he was like basically buried and flexed. And in Mexico, this was like almost like on the verge of causing a riot because there's such national pride. He had this big gringo, jacked up gringo come in and just ragdoll Alberto for the first time, who is their AAA, is the AAA mega champion. It's like basically their world champion. And he busted open Alberto for the first time in Alberto's career as well. He's never bled before this. And so this is a real personal issue. It's like America versus USA, or America versus Mexico, and the whole national pride thing. It's all about honor. And there's no bigger stip in Mexico. It's like they're mass versus mass, or hair versus hair, or hair versus mass matches. Those are bigger matches in Mexico than title matches. These are like that is like the next level of stipulation matches. So they're taking it to the next level at Triple Mania with the hair versus hair match. And I'm very curious to see how that one plays out. There's ramifications for both matches because no matter what happens in that dream match between Mysterio and Mysticis, you got to imagine that down the road, there's another dream match between either Mysticis and Alberto or Rey and Alberto. And so it's like, ooh, that's interesting, and that's big money matches. You know, all those are big money matches, no matter how you do them all, and they're big money matches. So you have a real opportunity down the road to really tell some compelling stories with this dream team that's supported underneath by all these cutting edge luchadors that are coming up, like Drago and Fenix and Aerostar, just really, really good guys. And Phantasma's an awesome guy that some people may be familiar with him in Lucha Underground as King Cuerno. But in Mexico, he's a second generation luchador. He wears like this phantom style mask. He's really amazing and bilingual, speaks fluent English, an awesome guy. And then there's guys like Angelico and Jack Evans. Jack Evans, a lot of guys stateside might be familiar with. He's really found a new lease on life in Mexico with Angelico. They have an amazing tag team vibe going for them, and their team with Fenix to take on the Hell Boys or the Hell Brothers for the Trios titles in a match that also is going to have Pentagon Jr., Phantasma. It's just a really – it's a stacked lineup. It's a really stacked lineup. So it's going to be a real fun show that's going to have star power, big matches, big consequences. You're not going to have screw finishes. Mm-hmm. Someone's hair is going to be – head's going to be shaved. And I remember when the first Triple Manias – I think it was a Triple Mania, but it was a big AAA event in 93 or 94. I'm not quite certain on the time frame, but it was Conan and Jake the Snake, and Jake had his head shaved. Think about that.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of interesting guys that have come out of or gone through AAA. Eddie Guerrero had a big run in AAA. Chris Jericho stopped by for a cup of coffee. He was pretty much working for the other he was working for the competition primarily, but he did come in. Chris Benoit worked there. Too Cold Scorpio worked there. In recent years, you had guys like Teddy Hart go through there. Teddy Hart in Mexico could be like a TV series on its own.
You ain't kidding there.
Can you imagine that? X-Pac was down there for a bit. So Kurt Angle's gone down there. Jeff Jarrett was down there. So you have a lot of talent that have come through this company, a lot of familiar faces. And, you know, there's more familiar faces probably coming down the road. So it's a really good time to get in on this product because there's a lot of interesting talent there now. And they got big designs going down the road where they want to take this. And, again, it's such a major league feel. It's authentic lucha. It's a lot of fun. It's easy to follow. And having English commentary, again, it's such a great thing to have on these pay-per-views because Hugo, who's at every show, basically, he's going to be like your professor, kind of like your Google. And he's going to be able to – you're going to be able to Google up any luchador during the show, and Stryker is going to ask him questions, and he's going to be able just to tell you all about their rivalry, all about their background. If if there's a – like the Villanos match against the Psycho Circus, their families have been feuding for almost 40 years. Their father's feud. I mean, it's just been going on forever. So to be able to tell that kind of history and have that depth and get that information during the show, I think it's going to be very helpful and enrich the experience for the fans watching.
One last thing. In mm-hmm. the amount of time that you've been around Ray, what is his state of mind now post-WWE? Does he feel like he has like a new lease on his career?
Yeah, he definitely does. I think he feels like he's he just, he has freedom, not to have to deal with. And I can tell you, when I left WWE, it was like on the car ride home, I'm like, man, I feel like I just left prison. And it's like the dark clouds dissipated. The sun came out. Birds were singing on my shoulder. It's a weird experience. But I think to have that heaviness lifted from you, and it's not like he has any bad feelings, but just be able to have freedom to do as you please, because he wants to do stuff in film and TV down in Mexico. He's got opportunities across the board to be able to pursue those and not have those not happen, because WWE gets ultimate say on anything and everything when you're under a deal. To have that freedom at this point when his kids are now teenagers, he wants to spend more time with his family. It's a wonderful thing. So he's very happy. I talked to him last night, and he's just, I don't think the guy's ever had a bad day. He's just, he really is such a positive, upbeat guy. When he just calls you, you just smile, because he's just got that kind of energy to him. So he's great for AAA. He's great for their locker room. He's great for their fans, because he's a major league star. And he has that vibe that I think just lights people up.
AAA Triple Mania 23 on pay-per-view in the United States and in Canada for the first time in 21 years. Coming up Sunday, August 9th, 7 p.m. Eastern. Everybody can find more information by going to AAALucha.com. The entire card is there with more matches to be announced and anything and everything else you want to know about the event. So, Court, always appreciate the time. And by the way, everybody also can go to MLWRadio.com and check out all the different podcasts there from MLW Radio. So, appreciate it, man.
Hey, let's do this again soon before we get too old.
Yeah, you ain't kidding, right?
The talking is over.
Thanks for downloading Between the Ropes.
Hey, you guys are awesome. Thank you.
For more, go to BetweenTheRopes.com and subscribe to Between the Ropes on iTunes.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.